Okay, I am sitting with Dr. Will Summers in Lexington in his home, and it is September 28th, 2004, and I want to thank you for agreeing to be a participant in this oral history project for the Boston Hemophilia Center called The Gift of Experience. So here we are, and Will, I'm going to start by asking you, where did you grow up? No, actually, I'm going to start by asking you what kind of hemophilia do you have?
Factor VIII deficiency, and when I was younger, I was at a 2% level, so fairly...
So it's moderate to mild,
although now it tends to come in at around the sort of 10% level for whatever reason.
Okay, and do you have any other chronic illnesses?
No.
None at all?
No.
Okay. So let me start by asking you, where, and how old are you?
40.
You're 40 years old, and your birth date is?
February 11, 64.
Okay. So where did you grow up, and who did you grow up with?
I grew up in England in a little village called Lechlade, which is about 2 hours drive west of London, with my parents and a brother, essentially. My two sisters were much older than us, so... They're actually 10 years older, so they were around when I was very young, but I don't really remember them being in the house.
And did your brother have hemophilia?
No.
Does your brother have hemophilia?
No, he doesn't.
And you're the only one in your immediate family?
Correct.
Was there any family history of hemophilia?
Yeah, I had a, I had an uncle, I guess. So I had an uncle that, that had hemophilia, obviously he was a lot older than me, and, but I didn't really grow up with him, see him that much, I don't think. I do have a nephew that has hemophilia, and he's probably in his early 20s at this point.
Did your family know about hemophilia before you were born?
Yes, they did.
Did they know?
Yes, they did. I mean, it was my uncle had it, and it was sort of well known at that point. They didn't know I had it until I had a vaccination and got a bruise from that. And my mother's mother said, "Well, I recognize that. You probably ought to have him tested."
So how old were you at that time?
I think I was pretty young. I think I was 2 or 3, something like that.
And so that's when you imagine you got diagnosed,
yes,
when you were 2 or 3 due to this bruising,
right,
that you got.
Right.
Okay, and tell me a little bit about your parents. Where are they from? What was their education? What were they like?
My parents are from the northeast of England, so from Tynemouth, so they're if you know the Newcastle accent, the sort of strong Geordie accent. Although I guess, as a result of being in the south for so long, the accent's faded. My father was in the Air Force.
What does it mean when you say they had a strong Geordie accent? Being an American, I have no idea what that means. Does it mean like a strong Irish accent here?
I mean, it's equivalent to that. I mean, I think if you were to visit there, you'd run into people you had a hard time understanding because the accent's so strong.
Do you have that kind of accent?
No, okay. I have a very standard sort of middle country kind of accent.
Okay.
My father was in the Air Force. He joined when he was very young and was actually flying bombers in the war and Second World War, and was flying transport planes after the war. My mother brought us up, essentially. I mean, she was some kind of secretary when she was younger. After she had children, she stayed at home.
And their educational level?
My father was, both of them finished high school. My father was...
your mother what?
Both of them finished high school.
Both of them finished high school.
My father, I guess, was training to be an accountant when the war started and chose to join the Air Force instead. But back then, I don't think many people went to university.
What is your first memory? And what is your first memory of hemophilia?
I'm not really, uh, Probably bruised ankles, things like that, that caused me to limp around for some period of time. I think they were more conservative with treatment back then, and so sometimes, you know, things would be, you know, left longer than they should have been. I can remember being hit by a swing and having to go to hospital for that.
What do you remember about going to the hospital?
Actually, the very early days, I can remember being on a drip and...
blood drip, you mean?
No, it wasn't whole blood. It was whatever came after whole blood,
the
I guess.
Cryoprecipitate?
Probably cryoprecipitate, I would guess. But it was, you know, a very large bottle. You're on a drip for, you know, quite a long period of time where that goes in. It was quite a large volume. So I remember that. And then I remember when they started using syringes and it was, the volume of liquid was greatly reduced at that point. It was certainly a much, much better situation.
Did you have to go to the hospital much growing up?
I don't think so. I think it was probably a couple of times a year or something like that.
And what would happen? What do you remember about your body in hemophilia?
It was usually a result of an injury. You know, I would I was basically doing all the same sports as everybody else at school. In England, that's soccer and rugby and these kinds of things.
So you were doing all those things?
Yeah. I don't think...
So your parents put really no restrictions on your activities?
No.
Now, how come? Was that because...
I don't think they wanted me to be treated any differently, and so as a result, I never, you know, I would just do what everybody else did. I didn't particularly enjoy playing rugby or soccer, but I wasn't that good at it, but I certainly, you know, I didn't want to be considered as being different in any way, so maybe everybody else was doing it, so I should do it too.
But there was no suggestion. Did you see doctors during that time around the hemophilia?
Well, I don't think they ever told me not to get involved in school sports. I mean, they've told me not to go scuba diving and not to do these kinds of things.
What other things other than scuba diving? Do you remember any restrictions other than scuba diving?
Scuba diving, windsurfing, they're all concerned about. There was some discussion. I was trying to get a pilot's license. In the UK, they had something called the Douglas Bader scholarship program for people with disabilities, whatever. And somehow I managed to. I felt like a fake going into this thing, because I felt like I was probably healthy compared to the other people that were there. But anyway, I got the scholarship, learned to fly, and there was a restriction placed on me that I had to have somebody else in the cockpit, which is ridiculous because, you know, I was perfectly healthy, as far as I was concerned. And so there was a bit of discussion then, you know, whether, you know, the Air Force doctors were discussing whether I should be allowed to fly, kind of thing. But I don't think the hemophilia doctors ever considered that to be an issue. But I think the things they really told me not to do was scuba diving. I mean, when I started, my parents called up the Oxford Hemophilia Centre and said, "Do you think you should do this?" And they said no. But I carried on and did it anyway.
They called who?
The Oxford Hemophilia Centre.
So you remember actually going to a hemophilia centre?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
From a young age?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there was one, one of the better centres in the UK was at Oxford. And the doctors there were really very good. And that was the place I always went to. Always.
And do you remember any feelings about the hemophilia at all? I mean, was it part of your psychological makeup as a kid?
Only in that if I really hit my leg or arm or something, I'd be thinking, oh God, now I've got to go off to the hospital, kind of thing. And it wasn't like I went off and didn't go home instantly. You know, I'd get home in the evening and be like, okay, well, I did this, you know, I'm probably going to have to do something about this. And that, you know, that was not something that was enjoyable, I don't think.
What wasn't enjoyable?
Well, the fact that, you know, you have to come to terms with the fact that you're going to have, you know, go to the hospital and get the shot and perhaps be limping around for a couple of weeks.
Did you ever miss school, or were you ever in the hospital for any period of time that you remember?
Yeah, I'm sure I missed the occasional day. There was one time where I hurt my hip, and it was sort of an odd situation. For some reason, I didn't treat it for a few days or a week. I remember being in hospital and really hurting, and then eventually I started treating it and it got better. But I remember that was a long event. It was like 3 or 4 weeks, something like that.
That you were actually in the hospital.
Well, I think I was in the hospital at least a few weeks, and certainly out of action probably for four.
And what was it like to be in the hospital in England?
Well, you're in these big wards, and I remember that time I was in a children's ward.
How old were you, do you think, when this happened?
I don't know. I remember actually I got in trouble from the nurses because we had, we put talcum, it was late at night, we put talcum powder on the beds and then bashed the beds, we made all the smoke, and so I couldn't have been that old, I don't think. I seem pretty young.
Probably weren't 18.
No, I don't think so. And I remember another visit to the hospital, they were giving me like chocolate milkshakes to try and get me to drink and eat food. So I guess I was pretty young.
But that's the only time you really remember spending any extended period in the hospital?
Yeah. I mean, certainly I think, you know, back then I think, you know, I was always reluctant to do anything about, you know, I'd hit my leg and then I'd wait a couple of days and see what would happen. And then, so usually by the time I saw somebody, it was probably a little worse than it should have been.
So do you remember your leg blowing up or being swollen?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You do remember that. Oh, yeah. And what would they do for it?
Well, I've had a cast on my ankle, but usually it was just immobilizing it, make me, you know, get in bed and sit there and, you know, get treatment and wait.
Who in your family was most involved with your care?
I would say my mother, I would think.
Your mom?
Yeah.
Because she was home?
She was home while my father sometimes would go away for, you know, a couple of weeks at a time. Yeah. I mean, I think he used to come to the hospital too, but when I was in there, but pretty sure my mother took care of most of it.
Were parents allowed to visit in the hospital or stay over? What was it like in England?
They never stayed over.
Yeah,
but they definitely visited every day.
Mm-hmm. You remember you got visited
every
day.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And your brother, how was he around all this? Did you have any sense of, did he come? Did he have any feelings about?
I don't remember him visiting me in the hospital too much, actually.
Yeah. Is he older or younger?
He's younger. We used to fight a lot, and so, you know, I mean, I think it was a normal sort of relationship between two brothers, you know, we used to compete and fight, and I don't think he held back because I would end up in hospital or anything. I don't remember ending up in hospital as a result of the fighting, but I certainly received a few injuries from time to time.
Was hemophilia talked about at home?
No, I don't think we really talked about it. I mean, obviously, if I was injured, it was, you know, we'd go off to the hospital and get treatment, but it was not something we ever really discussed.
So neither parent tried to in any way, don't do this, Will, don't do that. There was none of that growing up. You
never,
might get a bleed. Or
no, there was never that.
None of that?
No.
Okay. And when you got a bleed, was there ever any comment about it or any...
I don't think so. I think it was just a question, okay, we've got to deal with this, we've got to get you off to the hospital and get you seen to.
So it's really just integrated right into your life as you remember it.
Yeah.
There was not a lot of drama around it.
No.
Uh-huh. Or fear, per se.
No, there was no real fear. I mean, as I said, I mean, if I got an injury, it was sort of like, oh God, I've got to deal with this kind of thing.
For you?
For me, yeah, and I've got to just, you know, it'll be a couple of weeks so I can't run around or I can't do what I want to do. There was more that kind of feeling from me, if I don't think.
Did kids know that you had hemophilia? Was this something that kids knew about you?
I don't think so, actually. No, I don't think they knew.
So in school, you never had to deal with any peer relationships around the fact that you had this chronic illness or this chronic disease?
Because I think, looking back, I mean, I certainly gotten as many fights as anybody else and, did everything everybody else did. So I don't think, I'm pretty sure that nobody knew.
And rugby strikes me as a very heavy-duty contact
sport.
Did you get bleeds from playing that
I never really got anything serious from any of the sort of sporting-related things I ever did. It was usually, you know, walking into the corner of a table or something like that that would cause an injury. None of the sports I've ever done have ever really caused any injuries. I think part of the way to deal with this is to you know, get fit and be as active as you can. And
was that the philosophy you remembered?
I don't think anyone ever told me that. It was just something I always did. I always was running around doing things and windsurfing and suddenly I noticed that the more in shape I became and the fitter I got, the less trouble I had to deal with. And certainly, you know, once I got off to university, you know, literally it would be once a year or once every couple few years when I have to deal with it. I mean, it really was very infrequent at that point.
And what do you make of that?
What do you mean?
That it seems so infrequent once you got into university. Was it so much more in school before that? That you had to deal with it?
I think it gradually just got less and less as I got older. And it's obviously I'm not getting thrown over my brother's shoulders anymore into things, but I really think a lot of it has to do with how fit you are and how, you know, I used to, at university, I'd be lifting weights and swimming and windsurfing and scuba diving and doing all this kind of stuff, and you know, it was all, I was in pretty good shape back then. So you
went to scuba dive anyway, even though at some point it was contraindicated.
It just made no sense to me that I couldn't do it, and given all the other things I'd done, I mean, it was just, you know, literally I could go for maybe a couple of years without even needing treatment. It made no sense that I couldn't scuba dive. I actually was an instructor after a while.
Did you know other kids who had hemophilia? Was this part of your upbringing to try to...
I didn't know anybody else actually that had it.
Nobody else?
Mm-mm.
Yeah. Even when you went to the hemophilia treatment center, you didn't...
We ran into people, but we didn't. I think my sister was more involved with the hemophilia center when she had the Hemophilia Society when she had a son with hemophilia, but I wasn't. It wasn't something I felt like I needed to be part of particularly.
It's not something you particularly identified with or felt like you needed support around.
No.
Was there at any point a time when you wished you didn't have it or had any feelings about it?
The worst thing that happened was when I. For like 2 or 3 years into university, I had a bleed into my sort of stomach area, and that was something that went on for, seemed to go on for like a couple of months, and...
Did you even know it was a bleed?
I was feeling, actually it's funny, I had no money, and I walked to a pharmacy, I was going to get some iron tablets. I knew I'd lost some blood, and I was very, you know, I could see I was pale. And the price of the iron tablets are what made me go to the hospital. I'm like, I can't buy these. I'm going to go to the hospital and let them deal with it. And I got there and they were like, okay, don't move. We're going to get an ambulance. And they gave me blood and everything. So, I mean, that was probably the most serious thing I had. So, you know, after a couple of months of that, I was thinking, you know, this is something I don't need to be dealing with. You know, I'd much rather not have to deal with this. But I think most of the time it wasn't really an issue for me. You know, when you're lying there and you've got a sore ankle or whatever, you'd rather not be ill. But if you have something that affects you once every couple of years, it really became less of an issue.
Let me just go back to the treatment that you remember, because you're 40 years old, so that would bring us back to, you know, the 60s. There really wasn't any factor at that time.
Right.
What do you remember there being? You mostly just remember volume of drips.
Right. It's just a very large volume. You were getting it. It would take a long time to put it into you.
Mm-hmm.
I just remember that. I remember lying on a bed just waiting for it to happen, you know. But that's all I really remember from that. And I certainly remember the time they went in and they had these giant syringes instead. Now that's a big step forward.
It did. What was it like to go from the big, big bags to a giant syringe?
I think it was just much quicker, much more efficient when you went in there. It still wasn't any home treatment, I don't think. Certainly I didn't have it, but it was just much easier to... It just felt like it was something... It was convenience, basically. You go in and be out of there very quickly.
Yeah. And did you always feel like I have to be near a hospital?
No.
You'd never had that sense.
No. I mean, I remember my parents, you know, if we were going on vacation to other parts of Europe, I mean, they would get a book that had, you know, other hospitals in, and, you know, in case we needed them, but I don't think we ever did. I actually remember visiting a place in the north of England one time. I don't think any of the trips to other countries we ever visited anywhere else.
So it was really not, it didn't impact or impose itself on you terribly.
No.
Yeah. Who taught you about hemophilia? How'd you learn about it?
I'm assuming it was just these trips to the hospital and talking to the doctors. I don't really remember. It's just...
Yeah. Do you remember your impressions of the doctors or nurses, how they treated you, your feelings about them?
The doctors in Oxford were really good, actually. I mean, they...
What do you remember?
I remember there was a senior guy, Dr. Ritzer, who was who was he seemed to be very, you know, knowledgeable. You know, I guess people in the country was one of the people that people looked up to, seemed to understand what was going on. And the nurses are very nice, very nice to the patients that come in. I mean, I think it's it was very very different when I came to the hospital here. The first time I visited a hospital in the States at UCSF, I remember standing in a corridor. They're giving me a shot, and there's, you know, people that seemed like there were homeless people walking around past the corridor talking to me while this was going on. You know, in England, it was a very nice, you know, hospital. People were all very friendly, and you, I don't know, it just seemed like a very pleasant environment in comparison.
So it's a real shock coming to the States and
right.
going to San Francisco for the first time.
Right, and then dealing with, you know, health insurance and everything else is all kind of a... It seemed kind of an odd situation.
You never had to deal with that in England, the whole health insurance issue.
You just go along and they take care of you. I go along to any hospital and they take care of you.
You don't have to show anything?
No.
You just walk in and they take care of you?
My son was sick last Christmas and the doctors just saw him and we've never heard back.
Your son was sick and what?
Well, it was sick over Christmas vacation.
Yeah.
And we went to see a doctor and we haven't, you know, my wife said, well, where do we pay? I said, well, you can't pay. There's no mechanism of paying.
Oh, this is in England.
Yeah. So it was. It's actually a nice system to deal with. And the people at Oxford are really very, very good.
Do you think having hemophilia sort of affected your relationships in any way? Were you, you know, for your friendships or your feeling like you could tell people things about yourself? Was it a secret? Was it not? Or was it just a non-issue?
Well, it was certainly not something I wanted to talk about with most people. I was, I don't think any of my friends ever knew about it. I still don't know about it.
Really? Still don't know about it.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think if I was, you know, if I entered into a relationship with somebody, you know, eventually, perhaps, you know, if it was going somewhere serious, I would, you know, I would tell them. But
you would?
Yeah. But certainly...
You mean a female...
Okay. But I think a normal, you know, day-to-day relationship, I don't think there's any need for people to know.
When you limped at school or...
I didn't limp back then. See, when I hurt myself. I think people just assumed I'd hurt myself, you know. Kids occasionally hurt themselves and it was just like, oh, okay, he's hurt himself.
So it didn't happen often enough that people sort of went, what's with this guy?
No, I don't think so.
Or if you disappeared into the hospital for 3 weeks, they didn't wonder what the heck is this about.
You know, I just don't. You know, it's funny. I just don't remember. So maybe they did. It seems.
You just don't remember.
I just don't remember that it being the people ever treat me any differently, and I'm sure most people didn't even know. I mean, I can't imagine they did know because some of the, you know, occasionally. I mean, in England, it's. Around birthday times, it's pretty tough, and people will come and pick on you and you know, kick you and all this kind of stuff. I don't remember anybody not doing this to me. I think the treatment I got was as bad as everybody else.
So, tell me this again. In England, when it's your birthday, what happens?
So when you're a young kid in England, well, the school I was at, you get this thing called the bumps, where the people chase you, they catch you. Probably like 15 people will get around you, grab an arm and a leg each, and then throw you up in the air and kick you on the way down.
And kick you on the way
Yeah,
down.
And so this was, it's also obviously not something you want to, so firstly you don't want to let anybody know it's your birthday, but every year someone finds out, and then this happens to you. So I don't remember them sparing me in any way, so I can't imagine that people knew.
Huh, and do you ever imagine coming home with a bleed due to that kind of...
No, I don't think I ever did.
Never did.
Yeah. But maybe I did, I can't remember.
Anyway, you started telling me about it very early on in this interview that you, because of your hemophilia, you were able to apply for this special scholarship, was it, to learn how to fly?
Yeah, it was some kind of, I think it was called a Douglas Bader Scholarship or something. They probably still have it going on, actually. But, you know, most of the people there were pretty badly disabled, and I kind of felt like kind of a fate going into this thing. Everybody else was, you know, clearly had... problems to deal with, but I was, you know, definitely very happy to be learning to fly for nothing.
I see. So it's a way of getting into flying without having to pay the price.
Yeah,
the scholarship allowed.
We all lived at a flying school for 8 weeks and flying every day for nothing. So it was quite nice.
Did what kind of did these absences from school ever affect your schoolwork, or how was that managed for you?
The only time it ever became an issue was, as I said, I think it was second year university where I actually ended up missing, you know, I certainly several months of the school year.
Several months, right, from this internal bleed that you had. Right. Now tell me a little bit about that. Is it that you didn't really acknowledge that it was a bleed for the longest time, or you didn't know, or?
I think it was. I just think it was something that took a long time to heal. I mean, I ignored it for the first. Few days, I would imagine, but it was just something that they didn't really know what the problem was. They, you know, of course, they were discussing whether they should have to do some surgery, and in the end decided not to, and it eventually resolved itself, but it just took a long time.
Did you get any treatment for it to stop the bleed?
Oh, of course, yeah.
You did?
Right.
Yeah. So were you always forthcoming with physicians or your medical people with the fact that you had hemophilia?
Oh, yeah. Yes, of course.
Was that always at the top of your mind if something came about that you'd say you know?
Not sure what you mean.
In other words, were you always thinking in terms of hemophilia whenever you had any kind of physical ailment?
Oh, no. I mean, but, you know, obviously, you know, the times when you know, I mean, if you've got a swollen knee or whatever, you know what's going on. It's not, you know, it's not something else.
So you pretty much knew when you were having a bleed, even
right,
though it was mild and
right,
didn't have to deal with it, but you would know what it was.
Absolutely, yeah.
Uh-huh. And what you were telling me growing up is sometimes you try to ignore it and sort of say, let me see what this happens here before I really let anybody know about it.
Right, I guess I've always sort of done that. And
even today, you mean?
Well, perhaps not so much today because the factory is sitting in the fridge and it's very, very easy now. But certainly even when I first moved out here, doctors at the center here in Boston would give me a hard time for coming in too late. You know, coming with some massive bruise, and they'd be like, "Oh my God, you know, why didn't you come in sooner?"
Oh, so that sort of that trend continued with you through the years, up till this point.
Right.
But now you're saying, "Gee, there's factor in my refrigerator, so I can just infuse myself." Do you infuse yourself?
Oh yeah. No, I've done that since. Certainly, I think since I was probably in my early 20s, I would think, something like that.
Tell me about the treatment changes. I mean, what do you remember about how things got easier and easier? Are there certain points in your life that you can identify?
Well, at some point, I think in my early 20s, it got to the point where you could give yourself home treatment and... And at that point, it became much easier. I mean, certainly, you know, even though part of my time with university, I was at home, just giving myself factor. And at that point, I don't think. I mean, certainly the volumes have got lower than they were back then. But you know, essentially, it's the same kind of treatment. I mean, I guess companies are working on even trying to make it more convenient. But at that point, it became pretty good. I don't know why I did. I would still avoid using it. I guess maybe I didn't always have, I must have had factor VIII around at the time. I don't even know why I avoided it. I mean, now I'm just better about keeping a reasonable supply sitting there, and if anything happens, I just take care of it usually.
But what you're saying is for the longest time it seems like you did avoid treating yourself somehow.
Yeah, because a lot of things just get better. You know, just, you know, I tend to get, you know, the sports I do, I tend to get a lot of bruises, small bruises, and you know, there are a lot of them I'm thinking, okay, well, I'll wait a couple of days and see what happens, and most things just get better. And so it's not really, I don't feel it's worth, you know, dealing with the factor VIII. And I guess that's probably still the case now. I'm probably a little more proactive now, and I think if I notice, if I have a feeling it's going to get worse or is getting worse, I'm more realistic about dealing with it quickly now.
Do you think it's a matter of being more realistic? What do you mean by a more realistic?
Well, like, just rather than hoping it's going to get better, and then realizing a few days later that it's not going to.
I see. And does it get better if you give yourself factor?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So there's an immediate response you find. Your experience is that the bleed...
Unless I let it go for a long period of time and it's something huge at that point. But certainly if you get to it pretty early, it's pretty easy to take care of.
Now, you're married.
Mm-hmm.
And how old were you when you got married?
It was only a few years ago.
Is this your first marriage?
Mm-hmm.
Was having the hemophilia ever a concern of yours in meeting women or thinking about getting married or?
No, not really. No.
Yeah, yeah. Was there any issue for your wife when she heard about it, as far as having kids or?
You know, I think when people first hear about it, they don't really. I don't think they really know all the implications of it when they first hear. They're like, oh, okay. And certainly, you know, when I met Karen, she learned to scuba dive with me, and we're windsurfing, and I'm teaching her to windsurf, and we're hiking and camping and everything. It's like, well, big deal. You know, how this isn't really a problem. And I think that was sort of, most of the people I met were through something like scuba diving. So I don't think people assumed it was ever going to be really an issue.
Uh-huh. So therefore you think just in watching you with your lifestyle, she would think, what's to worry about?
Right, right.
Uh-huh. And since you've had children, have there been any discussions about the hemophilia or?
Well, I said, you know, my mother's commented, oh, you've got a son, that's good. He, you know, he's not going to be a carrier, and he's, and so that's a good thing. I mean, I don't particularly worry either way whether we have a girl or a boy or whether they're a carrier, but she's made that comment.
Tell me about your mother. Did she have any feelings about the disease having seen another generation have hemophilia before you and the real lack of treatment back then? Was she nervous about it, your grandmother? Do you remember any?
No, I don't remember. I mean, I'm sure she wasn't happy to find out that I had hemophilia, but I don't really remember her being, I was pretty young when she found out, so probably by the time I remember, she's already come to terms with it.
Yeah. So it pretty much was just a matter of that people took in stride in your family.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Tell me about the whole time of the 80s when there was the whole issue of the blood products and HIV and Hep C. Do you remember that period?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
What do you remember about it?
So obviously, you know, I was following all the headlines that were coming out about HIV and everything,
Were you in England at that time?
Yeah. It was also a time when I hadn't had any treatment for a couple few years, and so I was thinking, well, this is probably a good time not to be getting treatment. And at some point, there was a real concern about the supply of factor VIII, and that was the time when I started to have this bad bleed in my internal bleed. And so I went to the hospital, and at that point they said, well, you got two choices. You have this National Health Service material, which we think is higher quality than the American factor VIII, or we can have the heat-treated American factor VIII, which we think is safe. And so it was a little bit scary, because at that point there didn't appear to be any real hard data that about which option. I mean, even doctors didn't seem completely convinced about which way to go. And just to make it worse, actually, Oxford seemed to disagree with the Leeds Centre. So I started off treatment in Leeds, in the north of England, because that's where the university was, with American heat-treated material. And when I got down to Oxford, they were like, well, we'd prefer to switch you on to I guess it was from a small pool of donors, but switched me on to that material. So
you'd been using one factor in Leeds where everybody was saying this is the factor to use,
right.
And then you move and they go,
right.
We're not sure.
Right, right. So obviously it was a concern, and I certainly remember going and getting tested, and they gave you tests for years back then. And I guess they weren't sure, you know, how long things would take to show up. So you know, certainly I think every 6 months or so I would go in for a test.
And did they just test you? They tested you every 6 months in the center just to make sure. Did you have to seek it out? Did they seek you out? How did that work in England? Do you remember?
I don't remember.
Yeah.
I imagine they set up appointments and tell you to come in.
Yeah, but you must have been remembered waiting for the results. And
wondering. Oh, of course, yeah.
Yeah. But throughout it came out negative. Did you know people who were affected by the?
No, I mean, obviously I was following, you know, the headlines and consider myself pretty fortunate.
Yeah. But it sounds like you knew enough that the factor could have been contaminated.
Oh,
I mean,
of course.
For the longest time in America, people weren't putting it together.
Well, I mean, I think this happened at a time where a lot more was known about it. I mean, it was in the headlines that this was an issue. And suddenly, when I must have known, because I remember going to the hospital thinking, oh my God, you know, this is not a good time to be doing this. So then I wasn't happy with the idea of having to get factored right at that point.
And did you get it anyway?
Well, of course, yeah. I had literally every day for a couple, few months, probably a couple of months, I would think.
Because of this period that you had going on.
Right.
Yeah. And no Hep C involvement either.
Back then, there was no mention. I remember when I was young, I remember the doctor saying to me, well, we're going to give you a hepatitis B vaccination. And I was thinking, okay, fine. This seems okay, you can do that. But I didn't really... At that time, I had no comprehension that hepatitis is actually pretty serious. And, you know, they gave me the vaccination. I didn't really think anything of it.
Yeah. Did your having any, you know, involvement with doctors and hospitals and being around that as a kid affect your decision professionally of where you were going to go or what you were going to study?
I was thinking about getting into medical school, and I certainly my mother wanted me to be a doctor in medical school, and eventually...
And why do you think it, because you had experience with doctors, that you were familiar with hospitals, that you'd consider medical school? Was there any association, do you think, or not?
Not really. It just seemed like you're young. When in England, you have to make this decision when you're 18 or 19, so it just seemed like a reasonable thing to do. My grades weren't good enough because I had goofed off in school too much. And actually, eventually my grades were good enough, but at that point I'd been offered a course in biophysics, and that seemed like an interesting course, so I decided to do that. And at the end of that, I was offered the chance to do a PhD, so I did the PhD.
In biophysics?
In biophysics, too. It actually turned out to be a reasonable, pretty good career move at the end of the day, but it's one of these things I sort of drifted into, I guess.
What brought you over here to the United States?
I've been in the north of England for the same university for 7 years, and I really wanted a change. And, you know, I imagined that California was this beautiful place with beautiful beaches. And so I applied to schools in California to do a postdoc. So it's a 3 year, 2 or 3 year period after you finish your PhD. And ended up going there for a few years. And then, you know, after you've been in the States for a few years, it's very hard to move back.
It's hard to move back to England once you move here?
Yeah, just because the money over in the States is so much better than in the UK.
I see.
So I actually looked at the jobs in the UK, and they were offering me perhaps even, say, less than half, maybe a third of what the jobs out here were paying. So
it really?
So it became very difficult at that point to move back.
And so you touched upon the difference of going into a hospital in San Francisco versus your experience in England.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any other things that have struck you about getting care for your hemophilia here?
I think it's just the financial situation where you know how much the factor VIII costs, and you go to the hospital, and the hospitals seem obsessed with getting your insurance card and all this kind of stuff. And suddenly when I first arrived out here, I'm just like, what is this system? In fact, when I first arrived here, I actually moved house, and my bill went to the wrong house. So the first thing the hospital did was trash my credit rating. I had no credit rating, but they had a collection agency after me for the $40 copay or whatever it was. So that was my welcome to the U.S. Healthcare system.
Wow.
And in fact, for the next 5 years, I couldn't borrow money to buy a pillowcase.
Really?
Thanks to the bad credit rating. Because when you first move here, they don't know about you. You have no records. So when your only record is a bad record, it's really not a good situation. So, you know, I think it's... Whereas, you know, in England, you just literally don't deal with any of this. I mean, you have no concept what factor VIII costs.
Is the relationship between patient and doctor different here than it is in England?
Patient-nurse? You don't see them much here. I mean, I think in England, I always viewed these people as, you know, somebody I knew. I mean, they were the Dr. Ritzer probably, certainly all the time I was growing up, was at that hospital. I mean, he seemed to be there for forever until he retired. It seems that people here move around a lot more. I mean, it's hard for me to keep track of the people that I'm supposed to see at the center here.
So it's harder to develop.
Yeah, I mean, basically you go in and they see you, you get that thing dealt with, and you leave. And then, you know, often for me, by the next time I go in, there's a different set of people anyway. Sorry. And so certainly I've never stayed in a hospital in the States since I got here. Usually they try and get you out of there as quick as they can. Because I think in England, it doesn't seem to be as big a deal having you stay over.
I don't know if you were aware that there was a huge class action suit against the drug companies in the 80s and around the HIV infection. Were you aware of that?
I heard a little bit about it. Obviously, I didn't get involved because I didn't have HIV. I did have hepatitis C.
Oh, you did have that.
And so I just actually started finding out more information about it.
Did that change your politics at all around your relationship with doctors or medications? What was that effect, if any?
Well, you know, I just read the report that there's obviously pretty one-sided. It's from the lawyers representing the people that have been infected.
For the Hep C.
And if what they say is even half true, it's pretty shocking what the pharmaceutical companies were doing to try and maximize their profits, particularly here in the States, where they're buying blood and from prisons and these kinds of things. So, having said that, I work for a pharmaceutical company, which is on the other end of the litigation, and not this particular litigation, but I have mixed feelings about it. Certainly, if these guys, you know, were buying blood from prisoners when they were told not to, then they deserve to compensate people, and it's pretty outrageous what they did. But I don't really know enough to know whether the lawyers in this case are telling the truth.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But for you, just reading this new suit that's coming up around the Hep C, it's sort of making you think, whoa, whereas you weren't as involved back then because you didn't have HIV.
Right, right.
Yeah. You know, when you think of kids who are born with hemophilia today, would you have any thoughts or suggestions for those kids or their parents in how to prepare them to deal with it? Or
I mean, I would say that the key is to have them have as normal life as possible and try and keep them, you know, as active as possible and encourage them to be as, you know, physically fit as possible. And I really think there's a correlation between being physically fit and not having any problems. I mean, obviously I was, you know, fairly, you know, moderate to mild, but I think that the better shape you are, the less you have to deal with this. And the other thing I think is keeping joints in good condition. I think that if you get any joint bleeds, that you should deal with the factor VIII as quickly as possible because I think that I have a limp now, and
you have a what now?
A limp now. I have a sore.
You do hip. Have a limp.
I have a sore hip now that I think was caused by that, you know, one time in hospital where I didn't receive treatment for a week or so, and so, you know, I think that's the only thing I really have to deal with.
Is this limp that you have from the hip lead?
Right.
Yeah. What about to the doctors or nurses? You know, you had said, I think if I could tell a kid to lead as normal a life as possible. What do you mean by that?
I mean, that means that, you know, if, you know, even though, you know, obviously you I'm sure parents would be concerned about the idea of having their kids playing soccer or playing baseball, I would say, well, just do it. They should do everything that every other kid is doing. I think.
But what if they get a bleed?
Well, I think they should have some factor VIII and move on from that. I think the reality is, I think the less you do and the more you protect the kids, the more out of shape they'll become and the more bleeds they'll get. So I actually think that it really is a key to be as physically fit as possible, and really. I don't think it helps to try and protect people.
You don't?
No, I don't think so. I mean, certainly my nephew is less physically fit, and I think he has about the same factor levels as me. And he certainly doesn't seem to get away with it as much as I do. And certainly, I can feel that when I do more exercise, when I get bruises, they're much less severe.
So you think sort of living a normal life and not protecting kids from themselves or from getting bleeds is beneficial because on some level you feel like that would encourage them to go be more physically fit.
Yeah.
What about psychologically? I mean, is there anything that you felt helped or hindered you're coping with this? I know that's a pretty broad question. Were you ever afraid of it? Did you ever feel like, oh my God, you know, I shouldn't do this, or I shouldn't do that, or my... or, hey, I can do anything.
I guess the only thing that ever concerned me was, you know, I went traveling a little bit when I finished university, and so when I'm in some remote part of China, or Thailand or somewhere, you know, you sort of think, okay, I'm perhaps a little more isolated than I might be otherwise, and I'm certainly some distance away from being able to get reasonable treatment. But that's really the only time I've really I've ever been concerned about it. I mean, certainly not when I'm in any situation here.
Mm-hmm. But I think it's interesting what you say. It's probably not that helpful to protect kids, or, you know, in the sense of making them worry about the...
No, I don't think that. I don't think that helps at all.
Interesting. Okay. Is there anything you thought about my coming here that you knew I was going to be asking you about hemophilia? Is there anything that I haven't touched upon that you've been thinking about at all? Any memory that I didn't tap into?
I guess the only thing is that for me, and it's hard to know whether hemophilia was part of this, but certainly I've always been very determined just to go and do things and not let things get in my way, and certainly I think that sort of helped me in my career, if anything.
Really? In what way?
Well, you know, just people, you know, with work or university or whatever, let things, let obstacles get in the way, whereas I'm someone that doesn't let that happen. I'll always just try and find a way to get something done, and ultimately that helps you. So, you know, I've done, you know, fairly well at
some ways, maybe the hemophilia lent to your attitude of, I'm not going to let things get in my way. Mm-hmm. So do you think that actually harkens back to a voice in you when you were growing up saying, I have this, but I'm not going to let this get in my way. I'm going to do what I'm going to do anyway.
Yeah, I think it does, yeah.
And did that play out more when you were younger around exercise or sports?
You know, in high school, you just want to be like everybody else, and so I don't think I was going out to try and be better than anybody else, so I was just basically doing what everybody else was doing. I think when I got a little older, I wanted to be, you know, very physically fit and very determined to go out and be good at things. So.
But there was a psychological piece of you that said, I'm not going to let this get in my way.
Absolutely, yeah.
One last thing, and my question is pain. What is your relation? Have you had much pain in your life? Has this been a constant in your life or not?
My hip hurts now when I walk around in it too much, or when I've been windsurfing or kiteboarding or whatever. I come in and my hip will hurt after that. So that just relates to keeping joints in good condition. But I mean, clearly there was, you know, pain associated with these bleeds when I was younger, but you sort of, you know, it's just one of those things you sort of forget about. And I certainly don't look back and think, oh, I was in pain all the time when I was growing up. I don't think that at all. I more think about, you know, the bleed and the swelling, whatever, but I don't really think about the pain. I mean, clearly it hurt at the time.
But it was time limited, you mean. Do you remember how you dealt with it, or how you deal with it today, or do you think you have a different relationship to pain than someone who hasn't had to deal with it through their lives?
I don't really know, yeah. I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm. Hey, did you ever wish, or do you have any feelings? Imagine if you had a daughter and your daughter had a child with hemophilia, some with hemophilia. What do you think about that? Do you think it would be difficult or not? Hemophilia tends to be the similar severity throughout families.
Right. I think these days it's much easier than when I grew up, and it didn't slow me down very much. And I think that really the only thing that I'm dealing with today is a few joint issues, and I think that there's no reason to have to deal with that these days. Mm-hmm. So I really don't think that it's a problem.
Yeah. So you don't perceive it as that big a deal.
Right.
All right. You know, I think that's it.
Okay, good. Thanks.
Thank you.